So they've given up. They're finally done in, and the rat is dead in an alley back of the Wilhelmstrasse. Take a bow, G.I. Take a bow, little guy. The Superman of tomorrow lies dead at the feet of you common men of this afternoon. This is it, kid. This is the day, all the way from Newburyport to Vladivostok. You had what it took, and you gave it. And each of you has a hunk of rainbow around your helmet. Seems like free men have done it again.
By popular request, the Columbia Broadcasting System presents a repeat performance of On a Note of Triumph, a special broadcast written, directed, and produced by Norman Corwin for the Day of Victory. Martin Gable is narrator, and the music is by Bernard Herrmann. Martin Gable in Norman Corwin's On a Note of Triumph.
Victory is a sweet dish, or isn't it? And how do you think those lights look in Europe after 5 years of blackout going on to six? Brother, pretty good. Pretty good, sister. The kids of Poland soon will know what an orange tastes like. And the smell of honest-to-God bread, freshly made and sawdust-free, will create a stir in the streets of Athens. There's a hot time in the old town of Dnipropetrovsk tonight. And it is reasonable to assume the same goes for 1,000 other cities, including some Scandinavian. It can at last be said without jinxing the campaign. Somehow, the decadent democracies, the bungling Bolsheviks, the saps and softies, were tougher in the end than the brown shirt bully boys. And smarter, too. For without whipping a priest, burning a book, or slugging a Jew, without corralling a girl in a brothel or bleeding a child for plasma, far-flung ordinary men, unspectacular but free, rousing out of their habits in their homes, got up early one morning, flexed their muscles, learned as amateurs the manual of arms, and set out across perilous plains and oceans to whop the bejeepers out of the professionals. This stage can see the last communique bearing the mark of the Allied High Command. Clip it out of the morning paper and hand it over to your children for safekeeping.
We're gonna tell the postman next time he comes around that Mr. Hitler's new address is the Berlin Burying Ground. Round and around Hitler's grave, round and around we go. Gonna lay that feller down so he won't get up no more. Hitler went to the Russian front where every bullet missed him, but he caused a dose of Stalingrad that spread all through his system.
Round and around Hitler's grave, round and around we go. Gonna lay that feller down, he won't get up no more.
There are many variations on this melody tonight. Many a different tongue and tune saying the same thing. The Serbs would refer to it as
Obilashimo, okolo, nokolo, itrovo grova, okolo, nokolo.
And the Danes
Ogstagavi, rondom, Hitler's grave, Hitler's grave, Hitler's grave.
The Greeks have a word for it.
Giro somni matu, Hitler giro giro, pername, pername.
Obviously, the occasion calls for a round of cheers and a toast with the very best you have in the house. And it is entirely appropriate to make a joke and laugh at it. But fix your eyes on the horizons. Swing your ears about. Size up the day and date. Look in on prayer and thanksgiving, song and laughter. Dated planet Earth, May 1945. You, mother, in St. Louis on the Mississippi, whose firstborn is a visitor in Magdeburg on the Elbe.
Thank God I'll get my boy back instead of a telegram.
You patient wife of Bridgeport whose husband sat it out inside a Nazi camp.
Now he'll be home for longer than a furlough. Now he can see our daughter for the first time. She's 2 years old and it seems strange to think they've never met.
You minister and congregation in a wooden church, having come in from your farms through the nippy night air of New Hampshire, meeting together to thank the God of wrath for justice done.
Oh, sing unto the Lord a new song.
Let the congregation of saints praise him.
Let the praises of God be in their mouth.
And in a two-edged sword in their hands.
To be avenged of the nations.
And to rebuke the peoples.
To bind their kings in chains.
And you, Rabbi, in the synagogue, by the light of the menorah, by the light of the proud candelabra descended from the tabernacle in the wilderness, from Egypt to the Oklahoma prairie town, you, Rabbi, entering another Red Sea crossing in the ancient scroll.
No great tyranny has ever lasted. The empires of Pharaoh, Caesar, Philip, Napoleon, Hitler, each flourished and held sway and was destroyed. They were powerful, but all of them forgot one thing, that the only civilization which can endure is a free one.
And you, Bishop in the cathedral, singing Te Deums to him who has again delivered man.
Te Deum laudamus.
Te Dominum omnipotens.
Te aeternum patrem.
Omnis terra veneratur.
Tibi omnes angeli.
Have you time right now, listener, to stop in at 100 million homes? Some of them with plaster loose from the last bombing. Some in towns where townsmen's blood mixed lately with rainwater in the gutters. In farmhouses of steppe and uplands. In mining villages with regimented chimneys. In apartments of executives where decor is impeccable and genuine utrillos hang. In tenements where L trains go by every 7 minutes with a rack and roar. It's top of the evening. Hip, hip, hooray. How about another drink out? And a very good time's being had by all. Meanwhile, the crowds gather. Crowds in Times Square, Piccadilly, Nevsky Prospect. Crowds in the Loop, crowds on the boulevard. Gaiety and neon, laughter and the blare of horns. Headlines cheerful as a Christmas poster. Noise and glitter. This is it, kid. This is the day. This is what we've been waiting for. But through the din, the clamor, you hear a voice. In the hearing of your conscience, don't you get a whisper? Listen. Listen. Nothing yet. Just crowd. But listen close. Take your good ear out of low range. Whisk it high. Hoist it up to cirrostratus country. Up to where a B-29 has wing room. Flash across a dark Atlantic heaving under the sway of a victor's moon. Listen for intimations of wind and water in a rush of fog eastward of the Grand Banks. Below these waters, strewn beneath the lanes of porpoise and whale, the bones of how many good men lie. But never mind, running as we are eastward against the grain of time, we are over the isles and a hop and a jump. We're established now on the continent. So listen closely. Just a moment now. Don't expect to hear metallic speech from a rosette of amplifying horns on the high poles of the public address system. But listen for a modest voice, as sensible and intimate to you as the quiet turning of your own considered judgment. Now we're ready. The voice you hear will be that of the conqueror, the man of the hour, the man of the year, of the past 10 years and the next 20.
I'm a private first class in an army of one of the United Nations. If you don't mind, there's some things I'd like to ask.
Just a man in uniform you've met somewhere or seen in the newsreels, loading a truck, or marching, or read about in the dispatches. A fighting man, glad to be alive, a little tired but in good shape, a dozen battles notched in his gun stock and dug in his memory. Who is he? Well, his name and rank and nationality don't matter much. Just picture him where he may be tonight in Europe. Perhaps in his cot in a barracks, his hands behind his head thinking things over. Perhaps he's standing on a village green before a monument to the dead of World War I. Perhaps he's strolling in a history-weary valley under the same stars which 2,500 years ago watched a Persian brand of Nazi take a beating in the hills of Marathon. Close your eyes, and it could reasonably be this boy, that boy, any boy at all with war still thumping in his ears. Close your eyes and concentrate and listen.
If you don't mind, there are some things we guys would like to ask. First of all, who did we beat?
How much did it cost to beat him? What have we learned? What do we know now that we didn't know before?
What do we do now?
Is it all going to happen again?
Can it be? In the interim between the making of a toast and the drinking of it, such questions on the lips of fighting men tonight? Questions from areas of truce? Insistent, footnoting the surrender.
Who have we beaten?
Who have you beaten? Well, let's get hold of him and see. Lead him in and prop him up before our microphone. Now, look at this rubble of a man. Ragged, broken, blonde Nordic hair matted with pure Aryan blood, deaf from blast and blind from smoke, chin down, tail between his legs. Pity the poor beggar?
I was ordered to do it.
You hear? He was ordered to do it.
I'm a soldier. I'm a little man. I merely obeyed orders.
Whose orders?
The party's.
Who elected the party?
I did.
Who supported the party?
I did.
When you saw where the party was taking Germany, whose job was it to overthrow the party?
Mine.
And did you?
No. I was a member of the party.
He's meek. Now, he answers questions. He stands before you, gun-reft, palms empty, steel whip confiscated, wounded, defenseless, thrown upon your tender mercies, the quality of which he trusts shall not be strained. Observe him! Note him well! Now, if you wait until we spin the mic about so that it picks up the winter of a not long bygone year. It was the year Broker's Tip won the Kentucky Derby, and 3.2% beer was proclaimed morally fit for Americans to drink. It was 1933. The mic, reversible, goes back to it. Look at our German now. Fat and sassy, swastika on his armband,
cobblestone in hand, ready to advance the cause. Another Jewish store window is broken. The stock will presently be looted and the state is happy. Hey, nani, nani, Achtung and well-a-day. This has been a good week for the little man who obeys orders, and prosperity fills his jowls and biceps, for his Führer was appointed chancellor last Monday, and on Wednesday...
Open the door! Open!
Raids on the homes of leaders of the opposition parties, and on Thursday...
This is what we think of your newspaper. You are forbidden by decree to publish any further editions as of today.
Suppression of the opposition newspapers, and on Sunday...
Attention! An official government decree. Henceforth it shall be deemed a crime against the state, punishable by law, to make any criticisms whatever of Reichschancellor Hitler. Heil Hitler!
All this in the first week they were in the saddle. Every week then after, for 12 inbreeding years of 52 weeks each year, week in, week out. The looking around carefully before speaking. The leather heels on the door stoop and the bell ringing insistently at 3 in the morning. The stormtrooper, authority dangling from the holster on his hip, smugness fitting him like tights. The new decree, even worse than the one published last week. The dream of escape. The pillowful of border where kind people wait just across, just beyond, on the other side, so near they see you and have pity for you. And then the awakening in the room in Dusseldorf.
You're under arrest. Put your clothes on. Come with me.
Violence beyond the fitful dreams of the straitjacketed maniac in the asylum.
Tear out his beard by the roots. If his face comes off with it, all the better.
Arrogance enough to dwarf an Alp.
God has manifested himself not in Jesus Christ, but in Adolf Hitler.
Last week, pillage. This week, murder. Next week, burn the books and don't forget the Bible. Fourth week in April, trial of 1,000 priests and nuns. The men who are masterless but free now have a master but no freedom. However, they have discipline and a scapegoat. And one can go far on that. Hunger and poverty and a couple of big contributions from a couple of big industrialists were enough to get them started. And fancy treasons, foreign and domestic, kept them going. Also cruelties to make skin creep on the sweating scalp. The fat and hairy fist against the fragile mouth.
Now spit out your teeth, pretty one, and tell us, who else was in your trade union?
The conscript children. Putrescence in the classroom. Scum injected into the growing arm.
My father last night said to my mother that he hates der Führer.
Good boy. Where do you live, hon?
Last week, purge. This week, putsch. Next week, break a treaty. Form an axis. Give a hitch to Franco. Meanwhile, the small businessman who didn't kick into the party is framed on a trumped-up charge of listening to the British radio and is thrust protesting on a table for the guillotine.
No! No! I'm innocent! I have no radio! I'm innocent, I tell you! No!
This week and every week, the staggering lie. Nations stripped and tortured like a captive girl, while sidewalk superintendents stand by around the world and look on, fascinated. Even as they watch, of course, death warrants issued to themselves and to their sons. Extra, double feature, Austria and Anschluss, and the corpses of the suicides of gay Vienna are sanitarily disposed of. Darkness rising, pageants and parades, drapes and flags and searchlights in the goose step. Next week, umbrella dance at Munich. Salome bearing the head of John the Czech. And coming soon, too soon, lavish spectacle, millions in the cast, curtain going up, Poland devoured by lightning and locusts in 18 days. Would look. The land is bright. You can read an occupational order by the flare of the burning church. 1,600 of the townspeople are locked in there, but their screams have sizzled out, the children's being the first to cease. In the ruddy-complexioned evening of Bydgoszcz, steady, if you will, the reflected glow on the face of the little man who obeys orders. He hasn't had as much fun as this since the day he split open the professor's head in the well-planned scuffle on Froebelstrasse. Now, if you will permit us to move the mic along, being careful not to trip either over the rubble of treaties or the ruins of Rotterdam, we'll have a word with the same little man who last month pasted Denmark and Norway in his scrapbook.
Heil!
Will you explain why Rotterdam was bombed and thousands of its people killed after the city had surrendered?
Yeah, sure. Schrecklichkeit.
What's that?
Frightfulness, it means.
Frightfulness?
Yeah. That was our plan.
You mean Schrecklichkeit is an official policy of the German High Command?
Yeah.
You seem to feel pretty chipper.
Holland fell to us in 4 days. Denmark in one.
And France?
Will be in Paris before the end of June. Scene. Clearing the forest of Compiègne before the end of June. Occasion. Unconditional surrender of liberté, égalité, fraternité. Cast, in order of appearance. Hitler, sunshine boy. Goering, the splendid Nordic belly. Von Brauchitsch, the man who looks like a rat. Ribbentrop, the rat who looks like a man. Assorted admirals, generals, fluffiest plenipotentiary. Shira, the reporter, stands at the edge of the clearing, watching the party advance to the armistice car. His eyes are on the face of the Fuhrer, who the other day did a little dance for the newsreel cameras when he learned the good news of the death of France.
He glances slowly around the clearing, and now, as his eyes meet ours, he grasps the depth of his hatred, revengeful, triumphant hate. Suddenly, as though his face were not giving quite complete expression to his feelings, he throws his whole body into harmony with his mood. He swiftly snaps his hands on his hips, arches his shoulders, plants his feet wide apart. It is a magnificent gesture of burning contempt of this place.
The gloating hour is to be remembered. File it away in a bomb-proof corner, if such there be, against a better time, if such can possibly arrive. Meanwhile, other gestures of contempt soon fill the night skies over London. The cocky pilot, little man with wings, smiles in German, and the bombardier spits on his punctual hands, in forewarning of which below the news is published on the blacked-out air, and the workers of Britain, in bed with the aches of a long day at the factory, overtime, no Sundays off, roused now from their body-warm blankets in the cold room, shuffle along to the damp shelter, bleary, pooped out, hoping not to catch a direct hit or a sore throat. And, inevitably, in some postal zone or other, the hit is a direct hit. And the kid with the bright blonde hair and the turned-up nose moans all night among the rubble because his left leg hangs in blackened tatters. And he cries to his mother, who is dead. The siren is a musician of no value, knowing only one tune, which each time played is a disturbance of the peace. Oh, in the prime of the Luftwaffe, when there was nothing west of Dunkirk save prospects of invasion, the tenor of life in London was considerably beneath that of Berlin. For whereas the pubs of Westminster burned like books and synagogues, and the waters of the estuary blazed with oil, the warm cafes of Kurfürstendamm were busy and gay, and there was boating in the Tiergarten, the waltzes of J. Strauss of Austria, now part of the Reich, were especially lilting in the ballroom of the Adlon. The dances of A. Dvorak of Bohemia, lately absorbed by the greater Germany, were gay as could be, and the contralto and the Rathskeller, abrim with charm,
sang feelingly the leader of E. Grieg of Norway, Reich Protectorate. And war was glorious, and the best champagnes of France were poured on the tables of the Schutzstaffel. The finest grades of Danish bacon sputtered in the skillets of loyal party workers. Paintings from the Louvre hung tastefully on the walls of Berchtesgaden, and the iron ore of Sweden alloyed well with the bauxite of Spain. The music was but stimulating, and the performance but continuous, with a minor fanfare for the pushovers and the Balkans in the month of April. A flourish for the Isle of Crete in May. And in June, summer coming in with the sound of another broken treaty. Yea, on the dawn of the second day of summer, the little man who could be relied on to take orders took yet another order, proudly. He advanced, chin up, Stuka high, chest out, tanks pointed east, into the Soviet Union. And it was a great morning, and war was glorious, and it was exalting to kill and destroy for der Führer, as always. And the fanfare soon came every hour on the Reichsender radio. Smolensk, Kiev, and Oryel falling to the accompaniment of pronouncements from Lord Haw-Haw.
It will be futile to hope that one day the Soviets may rise again. They will never rise again. They are being smashed once and for all. When their defeat is completed, Britain will stand alone without one single barrier between her and the foe.
Bryansk, Odessa, Rostov, encirclement of Leningrad, siege of Moscow, Russia staggering under the bulletins of DNB, and the sale of Russian-German dictionaries boomed in Leipzig, city of books and culture. At about which time the little man took another swig of captured vodka, stripped another carload at Lublin, herded naked men, women, and children into hot showers to open their pores for the gas chamber, and then sat back in his barracks and listened to waltzes on the loudspeaker in the prison yard. Later, in conformity with the predictions of seasoned military observers, the Russians were crushed at Stalingrad. And that was the deciding blow. Hitler, the giver of orders, said so himself. Said no power on earth could push the Wehrmacht back from Stalingrad. And who could doubt the word of him in whom God hath manifested himself? What Hitler hath put asunder, no man could join. And that was that. And the wave of the future swept all before it. And the century of the uncommon Aryan opened up ahead. And Germany was promises. The little man no longer was a little man. He was a colossus, who stood with one foot in Rhodes and the other in Finland. He clapped his hands and a tanker went down off Atlantic City aflame. He blinked his eyes and there ensued mighty thunder, and Tobruk was his in a day. He inhaled and a million slaves trembled in his galleys. Nothing like him ever was.